Welcome to part 7, week 7 of The Leader in You. Just to point out this week will be the last week of this series, of the leadership series. Next week, from the 8th to the 22nd of September, we'll begin a new series next week called Fixing Mistakes. How to fix what we've messed up. That's next week. Don't worry, I won't assume just because you come next week that you had a lot of things that you messed up, okay? So I'll assume you came here for the academic stimulation. No, I'm just kidding. Also, today's shiur is dedicated to Mervyn Cohen, Moshe Ben Alexander. HaKohen, his yahrzeit is around this time of the year. And just blessing his neshama that I should have an aliyah, have an elevation, and generate blessing for the family. So, just to review from last week. Last week we talked about the time when Moses asked God to appoint a successor, to appoint someone who would lead the Jewish people after he passes away, after it was finalized that he wouldn't be able to go into the land of Israel. And when the wording that he uses when he asks God to appoint a successor, we derived 4 important leadership components from that conversation. And just to very briefly jog your memory, the first one was the need for a leader to embrace diversity, bearing in mind that the people that he or she leads don't all think alike, don't all have the same perspective and opinions and so on. The second was, on the other hand, we talked about the fact that he used the terminology ish, which is a terminology of strength. That although a person must embrace diversity, but you cannot pander to everyone's craziness, everyone's differences, but a person has to be able to set the tone, establish the why, as we talked about last week. The third was to lead in front, lead by example, and the fourth was a concept of timing and pacing, to know when to challenge, when to lead, when to expect the people who we lead to be empowered and to do things on their own. So that was last week. So today being the last time, I want to sort of try and put it all together and sort of share some general ideas and some revision in terms of at the core of what creates good and effective leadership. So just to bring it to sort of a close, we kind of established a couple of ideas, right? We established that, number one, leadership is not about authority necessarily. There are leaders that have authority, but it's not about authority. It's about influence, as we said. Kings are more about authority. Prophets are more about influence. We talked about this a few weeks ago. And the most important thing we talked about is that everyone is a leader. In other words, everyone has a circle of influence. We all have some group of people, some circle of influence, people who we can have the opportunity to guide, to inspire, to lift, and to empower. But what we do need to understand is that whatever the form of leadership we have, or whoever we are leading, one thing that we probably haven't emphasized enough, but is so important when it comes to the concept of leadership, is to understand that being a leader or leading is not only beneficial, doesn't only bring greatness to the people who we lead, but actually is the greatest opportunity for the leader, him or herself. In other words, when we lead, we become lifted. We gain. And this goes back to, again, to the greatest leader of all times, Moses. Moses, the leader of the Jewish people, who once in a tense moment, actually, when was being pressured by the Jewish people for meat and whatever the case is, he talked about leading the 600,000 strong of the Jewish people, which was the number, the symbolic number. I mean, it was actually more than 600,000, but it was always talked about in terms of 600,000. Because that was the census they would take of people eligible for military service, of men between 20 and 60, but it was about more like 3 million. But it would talk about 600,000, and he said the 600,000 ragle ha'am, the foot soldiers, in whose midst I stand, right? That's the way he referred to the Jewish people who he leads, the 600,000 foot soldiers. What does that mean, foot soldiers? So the commentaries explain that a leader is like a head. A leader leads, and a leader has to set the tone, and a leader has to guide, inspire, bring intellectual objectivity, values, and so on. However, a head, just like the analogy of a body, a head is limited. A head can only go where it needs to go with the feet. And a proper head understands that leading the feet are important, because without the feet, the leader can't go where he or she needs to go. And Moses understood that. And he referred to the Jewish people, although he was the greatest leader, although he stood tall, head and shoulders above everyone else symbolically, but he understood that by leading people who, to them maybe, he might have even be as great as being creating a gap of a head towards a foot, for example, but he understood that leading them carries him, just like the feet carry the head. Leading them carries him and elevates him and allows him to accomplish greatness and allows him to accomplish what he needs to accomplish, right? So that's an important concept. Whoever we have the opportunity to influence or to lead or to inspire, we gain perhaps sometimes more than those people who we have influence over. Now, why is that? Because when we talk about leadership, whatever form of leadership it is, whether it does come with authority, doesn't come with authority, but it's true leadership. True leadership means that it's a position of influence, a position of inspiration. It's always about true leadership. And this is what I want to sort of just bring together a little bit today before we finish off. True leadership is always about having the complete focus on the people who we lead, which is essentially, and I've said this before, essentially the difference, the distinction between power and leadership. Power is about the person who's in power. It's all about the person who's in power. Leadership is all about the people who we lead. And that's a very, very important thing for a leader to reflect on, because, again, in whatever context of leadership, because if we're about ourselves, we cannot lead. If it's about the people who we lead, then leadership becomes an effective thing. And I wanted to just sort of explore that and emphasize that through a bit of a model, which some of you are familiar with, because not so recently, but we've gone through this many, many times, but to go through it again briefly and to show you how this is such an important thing when it comes to leadership, is to just examine and have a look at what we always talk about, the 10 powers of the soul. We know that every person is governed, the world is governed, but every individual is governed by 10 powers, we call the 10 powers of the soul. And the first 9 divide themselves, what I call, into 3 triangles. We've done this many years ago, you'll remember. Just for those who are not quite familiar, I just want to go through it briefly. And those three triangles are right, left, and center. Right, left, and middle. Right, left, and middle. Right, left, and middle. What are those three triangles before we get to the 10th one? So the first triangle is the intellectual triangle. It's what we call Chochmah, Bina, and Daat. So Chochmah is the newness, it's the creation, it's the explosion of a new idea. Bina on the left-hand side is a completely different concept. It's about taking the new conception, the new idea, and breaking it down and developing it, exploring it, testing it, analyzing it, right? And that's the way intellect works. Intellect works where you have, in order to develop something that's real intellectually sound and deep, you have to first of all have new ideas, conceive new ideas. Sometimes we're learning, trying to understand something, and suddenly there's a light bulb, a very powerful light bulb moment where I got it, right? That's the conception of an idea. But if we let that go, it will disappear. It just dissipates. Nothing happens with it unless we take it to the level of Bina. Bina means where we actually explore it and we build a whole intellectual edifice. By the word Bina actually means a building, right? That's what Bina means, a building. Building of intellect. To build something so it's a proper, well understood, well developed, well thought out concept. And then we have Daat, and Daat is, that's the middle one. Daat is the connection. Daat is the ability to bring together Chochmah and Bina. Bring together the newness, the creativity, the power, the intensity of the new idea together with the understanding and the exploring and the analyzing. Because sometimes what happens is that sometimes a person will fall into the Bina mode and sort of explore an idea and start to intellectualize and forget what the original idea was all about. In other words, that the intellectual building is not guided by the initial thought, the initial idea, right? So the two things have to come together. And the reason I say that is because they're very different. The one is very, the Chochmah, again, I'm talking about in the world of intellect. The Chochmah idea is about creativity. It's about new ideas. Many, many people are very bright. They're bright in the Chochmah world, not in the Bina world. Meaning they always come with very, very bright concepts and very new ideas and creative ideas, but they don't go anywhere. Whereas Bina is that sort of methodical, mathematical mind who's able to sort of structure intellectual thought and take it from one place to another. But the problem with the people who live in the Bina world is they're often not able to sort of break out and think out of the box. Right? So the Chochmah and Bina are very, very different modes of thought. The skill is to bring them together, and that's the idea of Da'at. Da'at is the middle bringing them together. The same thing, a similar concept parallels when we go to the second triangle. I've put the triangles on your handout just for you to be able to see. Right, so the second triangle is what we call the emotional triangle. It's the primary emotions of the people. Chesed, Gvura, and Tiferet, which we've explored many, many times. But just, again, just to summarize it. Know that Chesed is the emotion. The word Chesed means kindness. But it doesn't mean kindness. In other words, Chesed really is anything to do with giving, anything to do with being flexible, anything to do with expansion, expanding out, love, flexibility, tolerance, giving, kindness, compassion. All these things have to do with Chesed, right? It's considered the right side of the emotions. Everything to do with going out. The left of that is Gevura, which is the opposite. Gevura is about discipline. It's about holding back. It's about withholding. Sometimes it could be a bad expression of Gevura. It could be severity. It could be aggression, where you reject someone rather than love them. It could be cruelty. But it can also be a good thing, like organization, like being disciplined. You know, that all that kind of thing, where you put things into almost rigid boxes, where you don't let things go where they shouldn't go, and so on and so forth. That's Chesed and Gevura. And that's really important because most people, right, and I think we've said this many times, but most people have a disposition to either a Chesed nature or a Gevura nature. And it's not as simple as that because there's a lot of combinations and formulas and things that interplay with each other and so on and so forth. But there is a concept of Chesed people and Gevura people. Not necessarily bad or good, just the different types of people. I mean, you've heard me say this many, many times, that if you want to run a project successfully, you don't ask a Chesed person. You ask a Gevura person who's organized, who can come to meetings on time, who can follow things through, right? You want to ride to the airport at 3 o'clock in the morning, you ask a Chesed person, right? Doesn't mind messing up their schedule, right? But it is that way. I mean, I know some people are absolutely lovely, lovely, lovely people. They would do anything for anyone. You can never get them to the minion on time because they just time doesn't feature in their world, right? On the other hand, you sometimes get people who are very reliable and they're very loyal and they come on time and they come and they leave and completely depend on them, but you can never get them to be a little bit more flexible, right? And that's the way our nature works. Now, the middle one of that triangle is something called Tiferet, which is beauty. And beauty, it's called beauty, or harmony, really, is probably the best. Harmony is probably the reason it's called beauty is because in the mystical writings it says that beauty is made up of different colors. They have a multicolored garment, so like it's a beautiful thing. But really, the more correct word is more harmony than beauty. Right, when you harmonize both things together. Now, I want to just stop there because in this triangle is where you see the real example of what I'm about to share with you. The concept of that middle line, right, where it's completely different. You see, the example I've given you in the past, and I'll do it again just so we bring out the point, to give you an example of Chesed, Gevura, and Tiferet, right? So you're walking along the street and a homeless person approaches you and says, I'm really, really hungry, can I have $10, right? The Chesed person doesn't think twice. Takes it. Could never withhold $10. Takes that $10, gives it to them. The pure Chesed person, right? The Gevura person thinks, $10. What's he going to use it for? You know, maybe he'll use it for dangerous drugs or whatever. That is, says no. He's fine. The Gevura person is fine to say no, right? What is the person who works on Tiferet do? He stops and says, what? It's got nothing to do with my personality. What's the truth here? What is needed, right? The Tiferet person is able to combine the Chesed and the Gevura together, right? So the Tiferet person, to use a simple example, would say to the person, no, I'm not going to give you $10, but come, there's a cafeteria across the road, I'll take you across the road and buy you a sandwich, right? And that person is doing Chesed and Gevura together. He's withholding something, which might be hard, depending on what kind of personality he or she has, but he's also giving, so he's taking him across the road, right? Now, it's not just about combining Chesed and Gevura. This is what I want to just emphasize because it'll be relevant to the leadership concept. It's not just about combining Chesed and Gevura. It's about going beyond ourselves. Because in this whole makeup of the 10 powers of the soul, the difference between the right, the left, and the middle is this. Most people fit into the right or the left. Most people sort of have a disposition, or at least are leaning towards one personality or another. That's how God made us, right? In order to synthesize, in order to bring them together, in order to bring the two, right and left, together and harmonize the two, it means going beyond ourselves. It means looking at a situation and not looking at ourselves. It means looking at what is needed rather than looking at what we want to do. Understand what I'm saying? So you walk around the street and the guy asks you for $10. So the response of the chesed person and the gvura person, both of them are responding not to what is needed, but what to what they want to do, what fits into their personality. Right? The person who exercises tiferet, either because they're lucky enough to be born that way, or like most of us have to work on that, which is the truth of most people, to actually build a tiferet mindset, is to say, it doesn't matter what I want. It doesn't matter if I'm a chesed person or a gevurah person, I'm not going to do either of the responses because they're both bad for the situation. They're both bad for the person. It's bad maybe to give them money because the assessment is that the person might use it wrongly. It's bad not to give them anything because they'll go hungry. So therefore, forget about what I need. Let's grow beyond myself and try and bring those two together if that's what's needed. Or in situations where what's needed is the complete opposite to my personality, I'm ready to do that as well. But it's about, the point is this, it's about not looking at what I want to do, it's looking at what is needed to be done. It's a very, very, that's why also in Kabbalistic writings, Tiferet is often referred to as emet, truth. Because that's what truth is. When you look at something only the way you want to look at it, that's not looking at it objectively, that's looking at it subjectively, and it's looking at it through the vision of the way you look at the world, and that's not objective, and therefore it's not necessarily true. Tiferet is often synonymous with truth because truth is looking at the thing rather than me. It's looking at what is needed, looking at the truth of the situation rather than mixing in my personality to the process. Okay, so that's Chesed Gevura Tiferet. And the same thing with the third triangle where we have Netzach, Hod, and Yesod, which I'm not going to go into in great length now, but it's the same idea. It's Netzach, Hod, Yesod is a balance between, it's like the supporting emotions. Ambition, humility, and then Yesod, which is sort of connecting to other people. But I don't want to go through that now because that's a bigger discussion, but the same sort of idea. Then there's the tenth power of the soul. And that tenth power of the soul is called Malchut. And Malchut essentially means leadership. That's what it means. Means the ability to implement, the ability to carry forward, the ability to communicate. Often Malchut is also synonymous Kabbalistically with the idea of Dibur, which is speech, words, communication. What is communication? As we've talked about many times, communication is the ability to go beyond myself and to enter the world of another person. That's what communication is. True communication. Real speech, as we've talked about many times, not just signal sending and blubbering on with words, but real speech is about connecting with someone else, the ability to find the right words, to find the right message that will resonate or will connect to the person or the people that I'm talking to, right? Now, what's amazing about Malchut is this. In the diagram of how the Kabbalists draw the 10 powers of the soul, so Malchut is not part of a triangle, but Malchut is also in the middle. It sits at the bottom underneath Tiferet, Yesod, and Da'at, right? All the middle ones then flow into Malchut. Because that's what Malchut is, number one. Malchut is the ability not to look at who you are, but to look at what's needed to communicate and connect to other people. That's leadership. The leader who gets stuck in his or her world cannot lead because they cannot embrace diversity. They cannot set a tone. They cannot do what's right and lead properly with strength, but humility at the same time, as we talked about last week. Right? So a true leader is about not looking at the right or the left, even though the leader might have a chesed personality or a gvurat personality or a chochma personality or a bina personality, whatever the case is, but the leader is about forgetting about those two and looking at what's needed to be able to communicate to others and to lead others. Which leads into the other concept of Malchut, which is that the Kabbalists describe Malchut in the following way. That although it's considered one of the seven emotions, because we have three intellectual and seven emotions, right? But actually it's a very different emotion. Because Malchut actually isn't an emotion. The way it's described in mystical writings is like the moon. The moon has not, doesn't have its own light. The moon absorbs the light from the sun and gives it forward. Right? Malchut is a similar thing. Malchut comes at the bottom. Why? Because Malchut doesn't have Malchut doesn't have its own identity, really. It doesn't have an emotion. There's no feeling called Malchut.
Yet it's under the emotional triangle.
Right. Why? Because it's under the emotional triangle because it's about connection to others. And the difference between intellect and emotion is that intellect is more for ourselves and emotion is more how we connect to others. But it's under all the emotions because it doesn't have its own identity, but it's under there because it absorbs from the emotions. In other words, it takes the emotions, takes what's needed from the emotions, but processes it in a way where it can put it forward and influence others. That's what Malchut is, really. Right? So that's the concept of, as we mentioned last week, that it says by Moses, an amazing thing, that Moses, this great leader, the strong leader, it says that Va'ish Moshe anav me'od mikol adam, that Moses was the most humble individual that ever existed. It's an amazing thing. We don't often associate leadership with humility. That's because we often confuse leadership with power. People who seek power are normally not humble. Read the American newspapers, you'll know what I mean. Right? Either of them. Right? People who seek power are not normally humble. Moses was incredibly humble. What does it mean to be incredibly humble? To be humble doesn't mean not to have strength. When he needed strength, he was very, very strong. When he needed to be assertive, he was incredibly assertive. Because that's the power of a leader, as we said last week. When it's in the same verse that it says he was humble, it calls him Ish. And Ish, as we said last week, is a terminology of strength. The Ish was humble. Not just anyone was humble. The Ish was humble. Meaning because he needed to be very strong because he needed to lead. A leader needs to lead. And a leader can't go from the back. A leader has to lead. A leader has to set the tone. A leader has to be assertive. A leader has to sometimes, as we said last week, not be so popular because that's the true leader. And yet it says by Moshe Rabbeinu that he was absolutely and totally humble. Why? Because Malchut, that's what leadership is. Leadership is his strength, his assertiveness, he's setting the tone, he's going against the tide. All of those things had nothing to do with him. It had to do with the people who was leading. It had to do with doing what's right rather than doing what serves him as an individual well. It was more about influencing and inspiring and leading and lifting. And if that needs to be strong, it's strong. If it needs to embrace diversity, it embraces diversity. It can incorporate a broad range of opposites and paradoxes because it's not about him. When a person is stuck in themselves, then it's very hard to embrace contradiction because I am in my box and you're in your box. But a true leader is Malchut. Malchut doesn't have anything. Malchut is the ultimate of humility. But Malchut is able, that's why it's the bottom of the emotions, it's able to draw from Chesed, from Gura, from Gvura, from Netzav. It's able to draw from whatever needs to be drawn, process it, nurture it, and communicate it further. It's like communication, the same thing with words. I think I've shared this with you before. In Kabbalistic writings, we have this a lot, where the concept of words is a very interesting thing. There's nothing more powerful than communication. As we've often explained, that the person is called the medaber, the way the identity of the person is called the communicator. Right? And yet, if we think about it, words are actually nothing. Words have no meaning. A person can get up there and say words that don't make any sense. You can talk gibberish from day to who knows what, just make up words and doesn't mean anything. So what's the strength of words? Words is as strong as the content that we put into the words. But that's its strength. It's like Malchut. It doesn't have anything, but it's able to absorb anything. So therefore, what I'll put into words will acquire a new strength it didn't have before. As we know, that emotions are inflamed and nurtured through communication, in a good way and in a bad way. Right, so communication is a very, very powerful tool. But that's the power of communication. It's like Malchut. It's the ability to be humble. It's the ability to take whatever content needs to be put in order to convey it and to transmit it further, which is the power of Malchut and the power of speech, the same sort of idea. And that's why that's real leadership. Real leadership is called Malchut that sits at the bottom because it's the true humility, because it's not about the person who leads. It's about focusing on the people who we lead and focusing on what needs to be done rather than what I want to do. And that's so true with all of us. I mean, you know, I've used parenting a few times as a model of leadership, right? It's exactly the same thing. So often parents clash with some of their children. Why? Because all parents mean well. All parents want to lead. But sometimes some of our children don't exactly gel with our personality. Don't forget, you know, a kid's got two parents, right? So the one's like the other one, you know. So that's the kid who you clash with, right? No, I'm just kidding. So, right? No, but that's really true. There's often a very, especially when kids hit teenagers, there's often a real personality clash between parents and kids, and it's very, very sad. But often parents, unfortunately, do things or use parenting strategies that don't work because what they're doing is, they mean well, but that doesn't work because they're doing what they want to do. They're not doing what's going to work. They're not doing what's going to be effective. And a parent, like all other leaders, has to think not what I want to do, not what I think is the right way to do it. I've got to communicate in a way where it's going to connect, where it's going to build a relationship between me and the child, where it's going to lift the child, where it's going to guide the child. Yes, I've got to set values. Yes, I've got to be assertive and provide the right guidance. But at the same time, it's got to be done in a way where it works, not where it's just what I want to do. And that's true in any, and it's true with friends, it's true with anything. Otherwise, it's true any time I want to have influence over other people, it's about thinking, how do I transmit the values in a way where it connects and it's beneficial for the other person rather than what I want to do? Be looking beyond my personality, looking beyond my world. So I just thought I'd sort of share that with you, that concept, just putting it into the 10 powers of the soul. So to sum it all up, what I want to do is just go through, I came across, by divine providence this week, because I've based a lot of the series on the book by Rabbi Sacks, as I shared with you. But I came across this week an article by Rabbi Sacks, which is not in his book, where he outlines what he calls the seven principles of Jewish leadership. And I thought I'd just go through it with you because it's really a good summary. Some of it is review, some of it is new, but it's just a good sort of formula. So the first thing he says, the number one, I put them very briefly on the handout if you want to follow along, but the first one he talks about is that leadership is about taking responsibility. Now we've done that, we went through that, that's what we talked about the first week, and that's where he has his famous concept where he looks at the differences between some of the earlier characters in the Chumash and the Torah by contrasting with them with Abraham and particularly Moses, where the first one is Adam and then others and Cain, where instead of taking responsibility, there's a lot of blaming that's going on, right? And even Noah, who was considered righteous, wasn't able to step up. He didn't blame anyone else, but he didn't step up and take responsibility and do something when something needed to be done, and instead he kept to his own world. But at the same time, we know Moshe Rabbeinu was very different. Moses was a model of taking responsibility. He was a person who went out. He was brought up in the palace of Pharaoh. He actually had a good life. He wasn't working as a slave, but yet went out and saw his brethren working and saw his brethren being persecuted, saw the Egyptian hitting the Jew in the street, and he could have just walked on and ignored it. He didn't do that. He took responsibility. He stood up. He responded, and he did something, right? And that's a very, very powerful thing, and it's a very difficult thing because blaming, not taking responsibility, and also blaming is a very, very easy and often used escape route that we all use, right? You know, we again, going back to parents, there's so much we can, when things go wrong, there's so many things we can blame. Friends, schools, teachers, who knows what, right? At the end of the day, we're the leaders. We're the leaders, therefore we've got to take responsibility, and it's irrelevant what's going on outside of our sphere. Whether it's friends, right? We can blame personalities, we can blame people, but at the end of the day, if we have an opportunity to help, if we have an opportunity to make a difference, we need to do that. Sometimes there's things in communities that need to be done, and we don't want to get involved. Like Noah, what I need it for? I don't need this, sorry, it's just a state of my own little thing. As we said, a tzaddik in a fur coat, a tzaddik in Pell's concept, which I've shared with you. And nevertheless, it didn't get done. Leadership means to be involved, to respond, each in our own way, but to not say, it's not for me, because we cannot, and we do not have the luxury of living alone. We live with other people, we have the responsibility to be leaders and followers, and therefore we need to respond. Often what happens is, we don't respond because it's overwhelming. We think to ourselves, it's like false humility. You know, what difference can I make? I'm not one of these big machers. I can't. We don't have to be a big macher, right? Because the concept is leadership doesn't have to be about big things. Leadership can be about little small acts. It can be about making a difference to one person, about making a difference to a small group of people. And we know, and we believe, and it's critical and fundamental to the way we believe as Jews, that every little thing that we do makes a difference, not just to the person we do it, but everything we do has a cosmic effect. Everything we do, like the Rambam says, Maimonides talks about this a lot, we should always view the world as a balanced scale, and everything we do could tip the scale. There's a ripple effect, there's an energy which we produce when we do something that has a positive or, God forbid, negative effect, not just on us, but on the entire world, really. So even if it's a small thing that we can do, let's do it, because when we do it, we make a difference to one person. We can never, as we told a few stories a few weeks ago, we can never undermine, we can never even evaluate the impact or the extent of the impact that we might be having. The second principle he goes through is an interesting principle which we haven't talked about so much, and that is that no one can lead alone. And he highlights a very, very interesting concept. You know, in Hebrew, the word for good is tov. Right? Now, the word for tov is mentioned many, many times in the Torah, particularly at the very beginning of the creation, where God used the word ki tov. So he saw, he created light and he saw it was good. He created the heaven, he saw it was good. Trees, vegetation, animals, everything, it says ki tov, tov ma'od, whatever the case is. And later on in the Chumash also, we see the word tov mentioned very, very often. However, there's only two times in the Torah, an interesting concept he points out, where the phrase lo tov is used, not good. Right? Twice. When? The first time is when God created Adam. And then God said, lo tov hayot Adam levado. It's not good for the man to be alone. A person must exist in the concept of a relationship on some level. And he creates Eve. The second is in the context of leadership. The famous story when Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law arrives in the desert just after the Torah was given. And he sees Moshe Rabbeinu being overwhelmed almost and being burnt out and judging people and responding to people's questions from morning to evening. And he comes and he says, like a really, really good father-in-law, he sits down with him and he says, lo tov, this is not good. It's not going to work. Nabol tibol, you're going to burn out. He says to him straight. And therefore he says, I've got a plan, right? We talked about this a few weeks ago. I've got a plan. The plan is to appoint leaders under you, middle management, whatever the case is, leaders of 10, leaders of hundreds, leaders of thousands. But he uses the term lo tov. So both times in the Torah, where the term lo tov is used, it's about not being alone. A person cannot be alone. And a person cannot lead alone. Even at the very top level of Moses' leadership, we find the interesting thing. We find that Moses was supported by his brother Aaron and his sister Miriam. We know that when the Jews traveled in the desert, they were given three blessings. One was the manna that fell from heaven to sustain them. They were given the water, which was from a rock, the miraculous spring of water, which traveled with them during their 40 years in the desert. And they also were given the Ananei HaKavod, which is the clouds of glory, which were these clouds that surrounded and encompassed them at all times to protect them from the elements and protect them from danger. So the Talmud tells us that these three things came from three different sources. The man, the sustenance, came in the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu, of Moses. It was so great that in his merit God gave us the man. But the clouds of glory came in the merit of Aaron, and the water came in the merit of Miriam. Which was the background of the story, you know, this famous story when Moses hit the rock. Why did that happen? Because when Miriam died, the water stopped. And Moses had to pray extra hard to get it back, and God told him to speak to the rock and hit the rock, whatever the case is. But it was Miriam and Aaron were support leadership roles. So yes, there's one Moses. He set the tone. He led from the front. He led the Jewish people. But a leader doesn't lead alone. And a leader doesn't lead alone on all levels. Sometimes people lead whatever it is, whether it's a group of parents or friends or communities, organizations, whatever the case is, and they do it alone and they burn out because they don't reach out when they need to reach out. They don't reach out to tap into the resources and the skills of people that might have skills that they don't have. Again, it goes back to the concept we said before. If it's about power, then you want to do it alone. If it's about me, then you don't look beyond me. But if it's about the people who I lead, if it's about true leadership and influence, no one is perfect, no one has all the resources. You tap into the people. You bring on board the people who can help. You bring on board people who can offer maybe something to the table that perhaps you can't offer. So that's the second principle, the concept of leaders cannot lead alone. Leaders need to lead with a team. They need to lead with other leaders. They need to lead with people. They might be on the top. They might be setting the tone. But they need to bring other people along for the journey. The third principle he talks about is that leadership is a focus on the future. And this is really a very, very important thing. One of the greatest, perhaps, missions or greatest mandates or purposes of a leader is to get people to look forward. Right? The greatest impediment to progress the greatest impediment to progress, and we'll probably talk about this a bit over the next 3 weeks, is in the new series, is being stuck in the past. That's the greatest impediment to growth. It's getting stuck in the things that happened yesterday. Now, of course, we need to learn from what happened yesterday. We need to draw lessons from what happened till now. But our main focus always has to be looking ahead. What is the goal? What is our destination? Where are we going to? Now, again, this is something we see very, very strongly with Moses. I've told you the story that when Moses brought the Jewish people to the Yamsuf, to the sea, the Red Sea, and they were trapped. And the Jewish people broke into four groups, four opinions about what to do, that to fight back, to surrender, to commit suicide, and to pray. Those are the four groups. Moses is not quite sure what to do there. It's the beginning of his leadership, and he turns to God, and God says, they're all wrong. They're all wrong. Tell them just to keep going. There might be a sea, but just to keep going. What was he saying? What does that mean? Why was praying wrong? Don't we know that praying is a really, really important thing? As Jewish people, you know, we pray. We believe in the power of prayer. But perhaps the reason is this, that when the Jewish people left Egypt and they came to the Yamsuf, they came to the sea, and they were unable to move forward, symbolically, figuratively speaking, what happened was they remained stuck in where they were coming from. And they forgot that they were moving towards something. And therefore they lost themselves. Even those who wanted to pray, it was a prayer out of desperation. It was a prayer out of not knowing what to do and not knowing where to go. And God says the problem with them is that they're really missing the point. They need to leave Mitzrayim behind. They need to leave where they came from behind. And he says to the Dabero B'nai Yisrael, he says, speak to the Jewish people, V'yisau, let them just move. So obviously he turns and says, move, but there's a sea there. And then the Talmud tells us that famous story that there was a guy called Nachshon ben Aminadav, a leader of the tribe of Yehuda, who says, well, Moses says to move, we move, and he jumps into the sea until it comes up to his neck and the sea splits. Right? And there's a deep lesson. A deep lesson is, of course, there's obstacles in front of us. Often we encounter challenges. Often we come to hitches in the road where we don't know what to do. But it depends what our perspective is. If we get stuck in where we came from, then what is in front of us seems insurmountable. But if our focus is really about, we have a destination, there's a goal out there, and that's where we want to reach, suddenly the obstacles become much less challenging, we're able to overcome them. We're able to split the sea, we're able just to keep moving forward. Who can do that? Who is to inspire someone to do that? A true leader. A true leader lifts. What does it mean to lift? To lift people out of being stuck in the past and move them forward, guide them, show them a light, show them a destination, show them a goal. It's about leaving people out of where they came from and focusing them on where they're going to. And this is what we see, you know, right now in the Chumash, in the weekly Parsha, we're reading the fifth book of the Chumash called Deuteronomy, Dvarim. And Dvarim is a very, very long speech. It's a speech that took 37 days. Right? So never complain about Rabbi's sermons, okay? Because... this was the longest one ever. This was 37 days. When Moses started on the 1st of Shvat and he spoke for 37 days straight until he passed away on the 7th of Adar. What was the purpose of that speech? The purpose of the speech was because he was leaving them. He was going to pass away in the desert. They were going to go into Israel. But it was kind of a new generation because the generation that he took out of Egypt really wasn't really there anymore because they were punished because of the spies and they weren't able to go into Israel. So most of them died out. And it was kind of a younger generation that was going in. And Moses spends 37 days preparing them to go into Israel. What's the focus? What's the flavor? What's the tone in the entire book of Dvarim? It's about not so much the history. He deals on that quickly. He does point out some of the mistakes they've made, but briefly, only so they should learn from it. But it's all about what's going to happen in the land of Israel. It's all about the future. It's all about where you're going to and what your goal is. And destination is. That's a true leader. He's about to leave them. 37 days. He's got only with them. He knows that's the end. He doesn't dwell on the accomplishments or what we've achieved. It's all about where are we going to, and that's a leader. Getting people to look forward and to look into the and to look in the future. It ends off the whole thing. The last thing he does is he blesses them, and he moves them into Israel, and he passes away in the desert. The fourth thing is an interesting one. He says, leaders learn. What does that mean, leaders learn? Often, when people become leaders on whatever level, and they become dedicated leaders, They forget the importance of personal growth. They forget about themselves. They forget about their own learning, their own study on whatever level that means, whether it's academic study or life study. But leaders, it's a challenge sometimes. A challenge sometimes we become so dedicated, and everything in life has to have a balance. You see sometimes people who are so communally minded or so leadership minded, but it becomes to the point where the dedication takes them to a place that they're so dedicated and they're so given over that they totally forget about themselves. And sometimes initially that's interpreted as being selfless, but at the end of the day it actually is self-destructive, because a leader can only lead if they have what to lead with. You have to lead with something. You have to lead with some values, with some knowledge, some inspiration. And therefore a leader also has to dedicate time and energy to preserving themselves, to growing themselves, to whether, again, a leadership on any level, whatever it is, but it's got to be a process where you learn to give, to grow yourself and to learn yourself in order to then have what to give. The fifth principle is a really critical one, and we've talked about this before, but just in the concept of these seven principles, is that a leader is someone who believes in the people that they lead. And this is a really, really important thing. It goes back to what we just said before. It's different to power. People who seek power, they believe in themselves. People who lead believe in the people that they lead. You know, unconditionally. And Moses, we see this with Moses in such an incredible way. There's so often where during the story of Exodus and the journey of the Jewish people in the desert, where the people mess up and God gets angry. And more than once where he says to Moses, you know what, I'm sick and tired of these people. I'll just destroy them. But not, it won't affect you, I promise. In fact, you'll be still great. Not only great as individual, but I'll make you into a great nation. And Moses fights. He fights for the people. At one point, there's a famous story where Moses turns around and he says to God, if you destroy the Jewish people, take my name out of the Torah. I'm not interested in the whole thing. In fact, an interesting thing, just has nothing to do with the talk, but just an interesting thing. If you look, there's one particular parsha, you know, in the Chumash, from the parsha of Shemot, which is the beginning of Exodus, when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, from when he was born, until this Dvarim, until he starts the 37-day speech, every single weekly parsha in the Torah has the name Moshe in it. It's always something to do with Moshe. He's always mentioned, with the exception of one. There's one called the parsha of Tetzaveh, which incidentally is always read around the time of Moses' Yahrzeit. Why? Because the Talmud tells us that when a righteous person says something, speech has an effect. And when Moses said to God that if you don't forgive the Jewish people, take me out of your Torah, so although God didn't destroy the Jewish people, he gave in to Moshe, so to speak, but nevertheless, even that threat had some effect, and therefore there's one parsha, the parsha around Moshe Rabbeinu's passing, that actually doesn't mention the name of Moshe. It's interesting. It's a whole chunk of, one of the weekly parashas, where actually his name is not mentioned in the whole parasha. Just an interesting concept. But why is that? Because Moshe Rabbeinu went out on a limb. He actually fought for the Jewish people. He challenged God to the point of asking questions. When he came in Egypt, when God sent him to be a leader, he came back and he challenged God. Yes, God said you've got to have more faith. Okay, and it'll be good, and there's challenges on the way, there's setbacks, but don't be afraid of the setbacks. But he said to God, you sent me to take them out of Egypt, but it's become worse for them and not better. God wants to destroy us when we didn't do the right thing. Moses, countless times, goes to God and says, no way. These are the people I lead. These are the people I believe in. They can repent. They can return. They've got to fix things. I'll help them fix. I'll help them do tshuva. But they are essentially good. They can do it. They can rise to the occasion. They can progress. They can grow. And that's a true leader. Because that's the difference, again, between leadership and power. You see, power controls people and leadership influences people. When you influence people, when you control people and suddenly you're not able to control them, so that they're not worth anything anymore. So then they're worthless, so you dispose of them. But when you influence people because you believe they can be influenced, you believe you can guide them, you believe you can lift them, then we believe in them. If it's about the people, then we believe in them, and come what may, unconditionally, we try again. If we have setbacks, we keep trying until we accomplish that guidance, that inspiration that we think we can do. Sixth principle he talks about is that the things we spoke about last week, but the leadership involves a sense of timing and pace. You have to know when to lead, when to push, when not to push. You know, there's a concept where we talked about last week where Moshe Rabbeinu says that God needs to appoint a leader that will walk in front of the people. So as Rabbi Sacks says, it's a very beautiful thing. He says sometimes, obviously, a leader has to set the tone and walk in front. But when a leader walks in front and then turns around and doesn't see anyone, he's obviously gone a bit too far, right? So you need to be able to, you need to walk in front, but you need to be able to take the people with you. You know, I once heard a nice thing about a rabbi. Someone's told me that what's the role of a rabbi? It's to make uncomfortable people comfortable and comfortable people uncomfortable. Right? I thought it's a nice way of doing it, right? Because like we said a few weeks ago, that's what it is. It's about understanding the people who you lead. It's about accepting them unconditionally and without judgment. And yet that's not a contradiction to challenging the status quo, to pushing people to, because at the end of the day, leadership is about lifting people. To lead, to be popular, to leave everyone comfortable where they are, that's not a leader, right? The idea is to challenge people and to get them to come out of their comfort zone a little bit, in whatever context of leadership it is. On the other hand, it's got to connect with them. It's got to be what they need and what they can do at the time. So the timing and the pacing is really, really important. So it's about leading in front. It's about staying in front. It's about setting values. It's about lifting people and bringing them with you, but not leaving them behind. It's about doing it in the right way, where you bring them with you at the right time. And finally, he says the seventh principle for a leader to understand is that leadership takes a lot of work. It's not an easy thing. It's a necessary thing. It's a critical thing. It's of tremendous benefit to the leader as well as it is to the follower, but it takes a lot of effort. And then we find countless examples of that, to the point where we see that great leaders sometimes would get frustrated and sometimes would say, I can't do this anymore. And they needed a bit of push from God or from other people to say, no, you can. Why is that? Because it isn't easy. That concept of embracing diversity is not an easy thing, because we do tend to get stuck in ourselves. That idea of being accepting non-judgmentally and yet challenging the status quo is not an easy thing. Inspiring others is not an easy thing. We need to remain inspired ourselves. All of these things are not easy things. Leadership takes effort. Why is that important to know? Because it's important to understand when we go into this concept of leadership that it's not an easy thing, but nevertheless a necessary and possible thing. If it doesn't happen easily, we don't get turned off, we don't get disillusioned, because we know it takes effort. We know there will be setbacks, and yet we overcome them. So I want to just conclude with a couple of things. First of all, I guess the most important lesson out of all of this, our last 7 weeks, is to just absorb this concept that we are all leaders, and we all need to understand these strategies and respond to people who we can lead. I just want to also just end off with two things. First of all, just in case it wasn't self-explanatory, this is the first time I'm launching this. We're going to be doing in the week of the 26th of September, Monday 26th of September, for a few days, we're going to be doing particularly three special events pre-Rosh Hashanah, which are outlined here. There'll be more emails and greater, more detail and so on and so forth. We've called it the Bina New Year SIM card, which stands for Stimulation, Inspiration and Motivation, which will help us get good reception and good connection to the new year. We have a principle we've talked about many times, that the more you prepare for something, the more meaningful it is. We're starting the new month of Elul, which is the month of preparation for Rosh Hashanah, and always good to come into the new year with meaning and purpose and understanding, and that's why we're going to have a lot of different things, but particularly these three feature events on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, the 26th, 27th, 28th of September, which will be for men and women over here. Really, really, it's going to be great events. Choose one or come to all or whatever the case is, and spread the word. You can take it with you. Just stay preparing us for the new year. And just to remind you again that next week on the Thursday, we start the new series, Fixing Mistakes, How to Fix What We've Messed Up. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you.